Welcome to part one of the Boiled Sports Mega Handsome Hour. In this episode of the Handsome Hour, we welcome in the newest edition of Boiled Sports, Anish Ramaswamy. You know him simply as the Swami. We'll discuss Purdue football, Purdue basketball, Daryl Hazel, Matt Painter, the NCAA tourney, A.J. Hammond's future, the program's future, and much more. You've chosen to listen to the Boiled Sports Handsome Hour, and we appreciate it. Welcome to the Boiled Sports Podcast, the Handsome Hour, long overdue, long delayed. It's just like it's been, as the old joke goes, several of Purdue's sports programs just have decided not to show up, so we decided not to show up as well. Oh, is that too harsh? I don't know.
The always jaded, always delicious Handsome Hour.
I'm Jay, and this is Boiled Dad. You know us from, hello, you know us. From our many appearances on
the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, we have guests on all the time, and I can't help but notice that we don't ever get asked to go on any. You know, I've never seen Derek Schultz ask us to come on his show.
What's with that, Derek?
I don't know. But he doesn't.
He didn't get on TV very much. Maybe he should just, if he'd ask us to like go on a sales call with him, and we could just talk to him and pretend.
Murphy's kind of disappeared into the ether, man. He doesn't even really.
I saw him. He was mixing it up with somebody the other day, but
that's what he does.
That's fun. I would think he'd be doing more of it with the Colts. Pats imminent.
He's probably a little nervous. If I know him,
you know, if I was a Pats fan, I'd be a little nervous because the Colts are playing with house money. I've been saying that. You know, they played the seed and their young team, and they accomplished their goal, which is making a next step. And so now, and the Patriots look vulnerable and. Why the hell not? Did I hear this right, that Josh McDaniel is somebody's talking about hiring him as head coach? Is that true?
Yeah. I think, who the heck was it? I thought the Browns
asinine.
Were talking about it.
Asinine.
Well, and the rumor was he was going to turn it down because it's such a terrible organization. Right. They fired a guy after 1 year.
Well, that's his boss started his meteoric rise there, but he couldn't do anything really there, right? Isn't that true? Am I misremembering? Because
it's his boss.
Belichick, right?
Yeah.
But he never went to playoffs with the Browns.
Belichick started there. That's right. I didn't even think about that. I don't know if he went to the playoffs there. I think he might have been there when they were still sort of respectable. And then
did they allow him to cheat in pregames like the Patriots did?
What do you mean in pregames?
You know, with the videotaping and.
Well, you mean like all the time, like.
Well, here's what I hear, Patriot fan. You know, I know you guys know this, but. Since he's been caught cheating, no Super Bowl championship.
He's gotten there a couple times, and Eli has seen to it that no soup for you, Tom Brady.
Yep.
So we've avoided the subject of Purdue long enough. So today on the Handsome Hour, today, tonight, depending on when you're listening to this wonderful show, well, you're going to hear from our guest, who's the newest member of Boiled Sports. You know him as the Swami. He'll be joining us just in a little while.
And I've got, by the way, remind me that I've got a little intro that I thought of, and I have not practiced it with him, and it's just kind of a pun, and I'm excited to unleash it on all y'all.
Oh, I have a little something too that may be so inappropriate that it may not make the final.
Okay,
cut.
good.
We'll try both. We'll see which one's good, and we'll use that in the final version. Yeah, there is. That's true. I'll probably switch it to video or something, and you'll see me recording here with my pants
on. That's
what
I was going to say. Pantless. The pantless hour.
Yeah, well, it makes it handsome. So, where do we begin? I mean, I don't know. We'll talk to the Swami a lot about basketball, I think, as that's really his forte. But, you know, we never really talked at the end of the football season, sadly. We never got a chance to connect we talked on our site, obviously, at length, but we didn't have a podcast at the end of the season. And, you know, I want to spend just a couple minutes talking about it because I think You know, we've talked about it on the site. We talked about it, each of us, and I think every Purdue fan's probably talked and thought about how just dreadful that season really was, and how no one, even those who felt they were realistic in looking at it, you being one of them, didn't foresee that. I remember you and I talking, and I said, yeah, you were definitely not as high on everything as I was, and a lot of people were, but you didn't see the bottom dropping out like that and being literally probably the worst, definitely the worst season of what you might call the modern era of football. And probably the worst season they've ever had. And that's hard to fathom. I mean, even when you say it, you think it can't really be the worst season they ever had. And it really kind of is.
I think that's something that we should post right before the spring game is how historically bad it was. And put, because, you know, you and I have done it off the air and just while talking and talked about other horrible seasons, you know, horrendous seasons. But you have to go really far back to get into that type of ineptitude. You know, it's not just that they lost, it's how they lost. And we've said that over and over. That's, they just didn't, they weren't in games. They didn't look like they belonged on the field. And, you know, and I love, you know, you and I do it. You look for historical, you know, similarities with other programs. And really the best comparison is Alvarez's Wisconsin team. If you're going to say a guy that went and was successful in year 2, 3, 4 and built something, you know, there's lots of examples of coaches that were horrible and then never got better. Of course, you don't have to look very far for that. But so my hope is, of course, is that the Alvarez model, because they were really, really bad, really bad. IU was not good, you know, under Mallory, and they got better. And Iowa, both under Hayden Fry. Actually, Hayden Fry was okay his first season. But they were a pretty bad program before that, so he kind of lifted them out of the mire and the muck right away. But Ferentz was not good right away. So let's just all hope and pray that – I mean, the thing, I was talking to our good pal Ed the other day, and I'm still of the belief that Hazel was a good hire. I really love the way the guy handles the media. I love his ideas and the fact that he acts like a leader of a big organization. That's all good. I like the guy. I think, you know, he just seems like the right guy. But until we have something to grasp hold on, something to believe in, all we're doing is, you know, kind of being what that guy was on Twitter to me, to Matt Painter, about Matt Painter the other day. But the difference is with Painter, you have a cross section of what, eight seasons. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, one before that. But I mean, that's a decent amount of information. With Hazel, we don't have that much information. We really don't.
No.
And it's a different, you know, not Painter versus Hazel, but it's kind of a shame that we couldn't have seen more of a body of work before Hazel came in. Mm-hmm. But we're in that era that you make a splash and then you impress in an interview, you're hired. It doesn't matter, you know, what your past is, really.
Well, I mean, if he'd gotten 11-1 at Purdue this year, he'd probably be the coach of Texas now.
Absolutely.
So, you know, like, I mean, I'm saying that sort of facetiously, but it's actually probably not untrue. I mean, he would have gone 11-1 back-to-back seasons. And in all seriousness, somebody big would have come calling.
Well, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. And it would have been a blue blood program that had a lot of money, plenty of money to handle the
USC something like that. You know, so I mean, I'm being a little facetious, but at the same time, I really think that would have probably happened. But you know, on the subject of winning games, and I'll probably bring this up next year too, as the season's getting started. Not to be negative or anything, but this guy now, I don't know if you recall the way the season ended for Kent State, but they went 11-1 and then lost the MAC title game, then lost their bowl game,
right,
and then lost every game against 1A teams this year. So he's going to be creeping towards 2 years since he's beaten a 1A team if they get off to a slow start next year.
Right, right.
How about that? How about you know, so he's 0-13 in his last 13 games against 1A schools. That doesn't happen too often.
No, it doesn't.
Does it?
It doesn't. For guys that have jobs.
0-13 against 1A schools.
That's great.
So, I mean, there's nowhere to go but up. We can say that. And you know, the other thing I did want to, before we move along, because I mean, I know there's a lot we can talk about with football, and I'm sure we will at different times. But one thing that's been on my mind, and I wanted to mention to you, and you know, this is a guy that Purdue and Burke decided we're going to pay someone now. We're going to give him money for assistance. You know, we don't know exact salary. I don't think we know, right? But he's making somewhere around $1.5 million, something like that. Putting him in the middle of the pay scale in the Big Ten.
I think he's
believe,
actually a little bit more than that with incentives. So.
Right. So he's being paid, correct?
He's being paid, yeah.
As a winner. I know he's being paid to win, though. It's not when Danny Hope was paid, you know, he came in at 800 grand or whatever it was. You know, the mediocre seasons to start were like, well, okay, we're almost going to bowl games with a guy, and he's beating Ohio State on a budget.
$2 million, 6-year contract. Sorry.
I think that the patience will be there, and Purdue's not an impatient place. Sure. But do you agree that if he has another season like this next year, then the heat will be on pretty seriously, right?
Especially, I think if he has one like this, there's no way Burke fires the guy after a second season. If they have a season that's similar, I haven't even looked ahead to next year's schedule. Have you? I know it's not as difficult. I haven't looked in a couple months because I was trying to forget that football existed.
I had looked ahead, but it's been a while for me as well.
Yeah.
But you don't think he would do it after two seasons? I mean,
no, here's what I think. I don't think there's any way he could afford to do it because of there's just not enough money in the hopper right now, you know?
Right.
But the bigger thing is the ticket sales, and maybe more than ticket sales, the amount of rear ends that are in the stands will be depressing. It will be really, really bad. And so you'll look at the gate, and then you'll look at the enthusiasm index, and then you'll look at the effect on sponsorship partners. That was a big deal. And Burke really didn't talk about it. He talked about economic effects around the football stadium, but he didn't talk about partners, you know. And I think that was a huge deal. No one wanted to sponsor that program during Hope's last season because they knew that it wasn't generating any money and wasn't getting people in the stadium. So to
answer your question, it is a little softer. They got
it's a lot softer. I got it right now.
Yeah, Western Michigan at home, Central Michigan at home, Notre Dame at Lucas Oil, which, of course, we like. Southern Illinois at home.
Wow. That recon is awesome. That is great.
Yeah, that is pretty great. And then Iowa, Illinois, the usual, Iowa, Illinois, Michigan State, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Got to go to Nebraska, Wisconsin at home.
Minnesota returns like everybody, don't they? So is Michigan State.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, Michigan State, I think, loses some of that defense. But
they lose a linebacker, don't they?
Yeah, I think they lose a couple linemen, too, I thought. But anyway, but it's not like they don't have guys right there behind them. I mean, that defense is going to be stout. They kept what's-his-face totally blanking on their defensive coordinator.
Narduzzi.
He I think he wants to coach, or I think people want him. I think he's got interest, but they seem to have held that coaching staff together. Yeah. Northwestern, Indiana, and then, of course, the Big Ten Championship game.
So you must be on are you on FBSschedules.com?
Yeah, of course, the first Google result.
Great.
Do you like how they – look, see the helmet?
Yeah, I was going to – I use got their chrome striper helmet. So.
Their candy striper helmet.
So,
that is a little so, – I mean,
that's a lot
if you
soft.
Can't win five games with that, then there's probably problems.
Well, I said it – I said it not in jest that I think – you and I and a group of our friends could have coached them to one win this year. I really, really believe that.
It's hard not to.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
they wouldn't have learned much under me during practice. I know, like, five plays, guys. I've coached 7-year-olds.
I played Tecmo Bowl. There's only four.
We're going to run a lot of Hail Marys.
The flea flicker again, Coach?
They'll never see it coming. Coach, we just ran it last play. All right, guys, I need you to hold your blocks. I know, O-line, you may be a little young, but we're just going to run the flea flicker 5 or 17 more times. The question, you want to do the super early predicto right now. I like your number. Let's say 4 or 5 wins. 4 or 5 wins, and you're in great progress land.
You absolutely are, and we'd be more excited with that. How about I throw this to you? But they win those three pre-con games, and let's say they win the game. I know I'm dreaming.
Yeah.
They win the game at Lucas Oil, and you're 4-0. Benda fans are bananas as you head into the
You're bananas, but you really accomplished nothing, right?
You've accomplished nothing, but you know what? You know what? That's what, if you did that, then you would be back where they were when they were leaving for Cincinnati last year.
You're right.
Everybody would be like, oh, my gosh, this guy is for real. Can you imagine? You'd be, and then
you would
I
be,
was
your, your man crush would be through the roof.
Oh,
you would be able to
goodness.
Leave from behind your desk in your big, powerful Midtown Manhattan office. You'd have to wear very thick pants.
And then Iowa would come to town and
just bloody their face. You know what, though? Iowa early in the season is not very good, regardless if they're a good or bad team.
That'd be the fifth game of the year. That wouldn't be early. That's about when they wake up
right.
And Ferentz gets them to start playing football. Exactly. Perfect. Oh, man. Then they get to go to Illinois and exact revenge for that miserable game. Man.
Exact revenge on all the fans.
I was going to say, it's like they
exact
should apologize.
Revenge, right? I think that's what we should do.
Oh, man. That was
horrible. Horrible.
We watched it. We sat there and watched.
So the interesting thing, if we want to go a little more in depth, the next layer of this Purdue football onion. There've only been two defections, which is surprising. One is a coach who was the director of recruiting. He was a recruiting coordinator, director Kevin Maurice. I don't think he's a huge loss. Haven't heard anybody singing his praises. He was a Danny Hope carryover. They've not named a person to come in for him. And of course, Purdue lost a linebacker today who was a big Hope recruit. Darn it, can't remember his name. That's too bad. Find out in 1 second. But that's it. That's so far. That's really surprising to me. Like I said, seasons like that have...
should have consequences.
Yeah. Armstead Williams, I apologize. Defensive end / linebacker. So Armstead Williams, though, he was a guy that I was very happy that they got him, and now he's gone. So just a short-term Boilermaker. He's going to Duquesne, so he's... taking his football seriously.
Well, I mean, I don't know how many jokes we can make really about serious football. I
mean, that's
true. As I've said to you, I look at. Do you ever watch a game like the national title game on Monday or any of the BCS games and think to yourself, they're playing the same sport that Purdue plays? That's kind of hard to believe.
Oh, that's crazy.
It doesn't even look like the same game.
Nope, nothing. The uniforms are fancy on Purdue. I mean,
Well. Sort of. Can you imagine how badly would Florida State beat Purdue?
Oh my god! They're just so fast and big, and well coached. Other than that, it's pretty even.
Yeah, and they're
speed,
down
strength, coach
down three touchdowns to the SEC champ, and they win.
That was crazy. Man. That was crazy. It was a fun game. Fun game.
It was. It was. I mean,
I actually the thing I took away from that game more than anything. It kind of made me sad, and I don't know if you relate with this. I know you you have a slightly different music taste than me, especially growing up, but I think you'll relate with this. One of the guys from De La Soul's son is the second string running back at Auburn.
Yes, yes.
I was like, man, I feel old.
Oh, come on, Everett Stevens.
Yeah, I know. But, yeah, no, it's like,
yeah. I mean, not Everett. Shoot.
Everett's son. Yeah, I gotcha.
Right. But you know how many times I've done that now? I've said Everett, and I'm like, and referring to the kid.
I think the kid's a man. So he's, I think he's one of these guys that hadn't really had a chance to get comfortable yet. I still have a ton of faith in that guy, and I guess we can transition.
I was going to say, let's start talking about basketball, and let's bring on our handsome guest of the evening. Let me get him connected here.
Jay, for a long time, we've had some good. Writers on top of us, of course, at BS. You know, I mean,
you've had writers on top of
it all the time. we've had a good additional, staffers, if you will, come in, interns, whatever you want to call them, depending on your perspective. But for a long time, we've really been looking for the fit, right? We've been looking for our niche, and we found him. This guy is so good with the
pun. Well, see, what I was gonna say is this has just been this podcast. Sometimes people say it's dull, it's kind of vanilla.
Right.
So we had to bring in chocolate fudge.
That's right.
And I didn't know if I could. Yeah, if I just, I'll just start it off with a racist joke.
Yeah, very good.
That's
very good.
There's no better way to break the ice than to just be completely inappropriate.
Well, listen, gentlemen, it's an honor to be on top of both of you.
Well,
I'm glad that you both think I can handle you both at once.
Yay, now.
I'm happy.
Bravo.
But thank you for...
The guy's been married for a long time. I got to tell you, I really appreciate it.
Listen, attention is attention, right?
Exactly.
Right. Somebody thinks I'm handsome. Hell yeah.
Well, you've introduced yourself in print a couple times, and on Twitter, people know who you are and know your tie-in, but if you want to, you know, I mean, I don't know if you want to do this, but you could give us a little background. That'd be great. I think the listeners would like to hear it. And I mean, we know it already. We got a good one here. I'll tell you that much, Handsome Hour listeners. But
sure.
Anish, go ahead and tell us about it.
Appreciate the kind words. Well, my name is Anish. I graduated from, I was born in Purdue, in West Lafayette, when my mom went to Purdue. I have aunts and uncles at Purdue. The first piece of clothing I had was a Purdue hoodie with the old school train logo. That's now as big as my palm. So unfortunately, I was born into this mess, and there's nothing I can do to get out of it. So I thought I'd just embrace it. I went, got a bachelor's and master's in biomedical engineering from the greatest university in the world, and now I am teaching.
Could you do us a favor and tell the listeners where you're teaching?
Oh, doubt. I am teaching at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
That's right. So what that means is...
I've heard of that.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've seen it on TV.
They don't let me within like 50 yards of the doors.
Right, right. For those of you who don't know, because you're not allowed to fancy smart guy parties that Anish goes to every week, that's the same institution of learning that was in Good Will Hunting for the smartest scientific minds in the world, many believe.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Good Will Hunting reference, not bad.
Yeah. So how do you like them apples?
That's right.
All right. So currently he's residing in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and he is Anish. Are you? I don't think you guys we really talked about the Colts thing. Are you a Colts fan because you're from Central Indiana?
I'm a pretty big Colts fan, and really, they're the only team that I root for that's ever been good to me.
Okay.
So I'll take them. Yes, I'm a pretty big Colts fan.
So you're having a lot of fun this week dealing with Patriots.
That's right. I'm wearing all my Colts gear, drinking out of my Colts coffee mug every day. I'll be going to my sports bar with my Reggie Wayne jersey this weekend.
That's what I'm talking about. It's we can ask you because you're on the ground, but we were referencing our buddy Brendan Murphy, who's a Patriots fan, and he's been awfully quiet. We think are Patriots fans confident right now?
You know, I think they would rather have played the Colts than the alternatives. So, and I would have rather played the Patriots than
Me
the Broncos.
Too.
So I think it's just begrudging. I think at this point, everybody's just like, yep, it's about that time again. I don't know. I'm terrified because this Patriots team's not very good, and neither is this Colts team. But you know, they have Belichick and Ty and Brady and all that. So
yeah.
I'm not really expecting too much other than just to annoy the Patriots fans around me at the bar.
Yeah.
Man, all I can say though is, as a sort of, I'm not totally impartial. I definitely like the Colts because of my time in Indiana, and I've got no love for any New England team.
No.
But man, it would be fun to see New England lose. Just anytime that they don't think they should lose, which is pretty much any time, it's awesome. And now, if they lose to a juggernaut, then I think they can probably get over it. But when they lose to like a 9-7 Giants team in the Super Bowl, or if they were to lose on their home field to the Colts, I think that would probably crush them. I don't know. I imagine you would agree.
Yeah, I think it's accurate. It's not going to be too cold out there, right?
No, it's supposed to be like in the 50s as well.
Wow, awesome. Right now, it's like 40 degrees outside. It's beautiful.
Man, nice.
It forces you to do that.
That's right. I get a lot of podcast listening when I'm walking to and from work every day, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's cool.
Starting with this one. Look at that.
I know we link to the iTunes, but I've done a search and I can't find us.
No, we're having a problem with iTunes. I've talked about this before. I'm blaming Hank from the Railroad Tie or on that one because he's helped us with everything else so far.
Sure, sure.
And that part but really what happened was he gave me full explicit instructions, extremely detailed on how to get iTunes to recognize us. And I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
So, but I think that's
I think it's good to blame Hank since we would be talking on a pair of old Campbell soup cans.
Right. Tied together. Yeah, absolutely. I've called him at 11 o'clock at night and been like, I can't, I don't know how to edit this.
It's pretty awesome. Honestly, I got to thank him. And then I'm going to go the next step and thank Jay because I've stayed clean of this, and Jay knows that I know just about enough about technology to turn on a computer or a smartphone. It's amazing. I've aged like 15 years in the last 3 years. Awesome. And I'm one of the people, I'm at a computer every single day and I don't know anything. It's awesome. So
are you one of those old people on Facebook posting inappropriate things?
No, I'm barely on Facebook. I have a shadowy Facebook account that has no attachment to my name, and Jay makes fun of me, but I had some of the kids from my church youth group.
Well, you were on Facebook back when it was not an awful place.
Right.
I will say, I'll give you that you were an early adapter, and you were on there. What I always say about Facebook is when, like, 5-6 years ago, Facebook was full of funny, clever, smart-ass people, because right. That's who was on there. And then every soccer mom got on there, and now it's just dreadful.
Oh, you guys sounding like Facebook hipsters.
Yeah.
No, well, I'm on it. But you know what I've said to him is that he and I are good friends. And we live – here goes my voice. It's going.
Awesome. You can hear it going.
This is the only thing I have, Anish, is I have the pipe.
Yeah.
That's all I've got.
And they're being taken away from you too.
Man.
So, hey, by the way, hey, hit your mute button. I'll tell a joke while you're doing it.
Oh, okay. Shut your
face. Okay, so – okay, hey, Anish. Why did the hipster burn his lips on his coffee?
Why did the hipster burn his lips on his coffee?
Because he drank it before it was cool.
Hey!
That's a good one. That's a good one.
So, oh, man. So,
good stuff.
So we've probably got no actual content.
No, zero.
So,
right. So what we were about to start talking about was we were actually talking about how old we are because, you know, that's something that comes up frequently in Asian week. And I've commented how it's like several times now I've referred to Kid Stevens as Everett Stevens. Mm-hmm. And I've done it totally. And I wasn't really that big of a Purdue fan 25 years ago. I mean, I knew what Purdue was and who they were, but I wasn't going there yet.
Ivy League.
So yeah, exactly. Ivy League of the Midwest. that's what people in New Jersey think. Which only bodes well for me. I'm always like, no, it's a state school. I mean, it's a good school, but it's not like, I mean, they hold it in high esteem. That's fantastic. So yeah, we were just talking about, and then Ryan, you started just saying you think you're expecting to see more development out of him this year. But I mean, I think there have been moments though where he's been, I don't know that it's been. I like what I've seen.
Sure.
I don't. He's not my biggest concern at all. Right. At all. Right. Like this year, I think as a freshman. I don't know. What more do you want out of a freshman? There's not going to be too many Rob Hummels coming through.
No. I mean, I think these guys have played like a solid bunch of freshmen, really. That's just it. And that's all I can ask. The problem that Purdue has right now is the development. That's the biggest issue that Purdue's basketball team has, to me, is that guys just don't seem to be going forward. Nish, do you right. disagree with that? I mean, Jay and I have talked about this quite a bit. It's frustrating to me.
Do you mean... You mean since the, you know, the baby boilers came in,
yeah.
right? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, the reason that all these big men want to come to Purdue is because Matt Painter develops big men. And I think he hasn't stagnated that way, I don't think.
Sure.
I think his you know, his weaknesses are kind of on the perimeter, and that's why you've seen us move away. You know, from the motion a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, it's easy to have, you know, developmental problems kind of masked by a talent like Etuan Moore, you know?
Yeah.
And I think both Coach Painter and all of us as fans have been kind of spoiled by what, not even what Rob gave us, but what Etuan Moore did. I mean, right. if you remember, all he did his entire career was shoot something like 35%, 40% from the field,
yeah.
score, you know, 15 to 20 points a game,
yeah.
and just go in, do his business. And, you know, that was from day one. He was the only one out of, you know, that baby boilers class that was a starter from day one.
Right out of the
and
shoot, yeah.
So, you know, in that way, I don't.
Well, how about this?
I think,
though? Let's revisit something real quickly, because you start that thesis there. With Matt Painter develops big men, okay?
Sure.
Obviously, Juwan Johnson was an incredible development. From start to finish, that was incredible. To go from really a guy who was gawky and a little awkward and a project to a consensus All-American, that's fantastic in this era. Mm-hmm. You know, now let's go from there. This is our thing. I mean, I was just watching Marchuch just beat Butler. I mean, Sandy Marchuch is.
Watching that. Yeah, while I was waiting for the call, I was just watching
right.
that.
Right.
You know, I would actually start from Landry. I would start from Carl Landry, and it wasn't really development, but it was he harnessed him, and he coming back from a major knee injury.
Yeah.
I think he did a great job with that team. Then going into Juwan Johnson, oh my God, what's his name? He was my favorite. I called him the Bosnian Barricade. Jesus.
Number 44.
Yeah.
Kalasian.
Yeah. Nemanja Kalasan.
Yeah.
Kalasan.
There we go. I mean, you know,
we all
a big
pronounce man. That a different way, by the way.
I don't know. Yeah. We.
Awesome.
He was the best.
I think the C is a ch sound.
I think it's Kalasan. I mean, I think you might be right.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But, you know, I mean, he was a legitimate stretch four. Juwan Johnson.
What's he doing now? Is he playing in overseas?
I don't think he's playing. I think he's doing something with law enforcement, I want to say.
Is that true?
Yeah. I mean,
man, that'd be terrifying to get pulled over by that guy.
That's what I'm saying. The most stark memory of him I have is, I think, my freshman year in 2007, when Scott Martin just twisted his ankle and he just picked him up and like nothing. It was amazing.
Yeah, and Scott Martin's a tiny 6'9", right? Gracious.
You know, but to get back to the big man thing, we haven't had a post big man until AJ Hammonds, and now we're going to have Isaac Haas coming in, and I think that is something that should go on, what Coach Painter does. I'm more concerned about the perimeter, with people like, Kendall Stevens to kind of bring it back. I think he needs to develop defensively. I think he needs to take more threes. I really do think he needs to take about 6 or 7 threes per game. Half of them can be good, half of them can be bad. He's such a great shooter, and that three is so much more of value than any stupid mid-range floater that we take. but what gets me frustrated when I watch tape of Kendall Stevens is him on defense. And his communication or lack of communication with anybody on a switch, off a screen, is just infuriating.
Well, I think that the big thing you're seeing is, especially the first couple games, it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong here, but Painter is really shielding him from foul trouble, it seems, more than he was the first couple games. The first couple games, he was getting in foul trouble almost right away, right? He'd get 2 fouls in no time flat, right? And and he was playing, he's very obvious when he's reaching in because his arms are so damn long.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other night, one thing that I was, some people hate Dan Dockett, so I actually don't have a huge problem with him at times. I guess that's a weird thing. Jay and I have talked about this. Sometimes I really dislike him. But he was talking, he said, the one thing is he said, show your hands every time, when a guy starts getting past you, put your hands in the air. And he said, this is what Aaron Kraft does. He's figured out the officials, if they see your hands up near your shoulders, then they know you're not reaching in and your feet are getting out in front of the guy. Whereas you look at Tyrone Johnson and you look at Kendall Stevens, and both these guys, they're getting inside a guy with their hands almost like they're hitting a sled, in football, and then their hands disappear. The refs call it every single time. And I was like, dang, that was a good point by Dockett, that that little technique, and Kraft is so damn crafty, he's but it's true. The guy's brilliant.
He's great.
I know he's got the refs in his back pocket. I get all that, but he also, he plays tight defense and he manages to never get fouls. And part of that is just smart technique, veteran stuff,
Yeah. I think, first of all, I think Dan Dockett is a really great color announcer. And he's the worst Twitter personality or radio show personality. He's really bad.
Well, he tries to. Very thin skin.
That's the problem. But when he's calling a game, he's calling it like a very, very intelligent former coach. And it's great.
Yeah, but Nish, wouldn't you say that we grudgingly said that Bob Knight was kind of incredible as a color guy?
I don't know. Like, I, when he contributed and when he wanted to be, he was great.
Yeah, yeah.
But then towards when they started cutting him off, he couldn't care less.
Right.
So when he was putting in an effort, I think
I think that goes without saying. It was when he was right. I think it was early. For me, it was when the first year, season they had him doing.
Yeah, games. That was.
You're like, wow, I don't want to like this, but he's telling me things that nobody else tells me in that position, because he was actually giving it thought as a coach. He said, "Here's how I would handle this, and here's what I used to say to these guys, and here's how I would." I mean, he'd even talk about the arenas he was in. He goes, "This would piss me off in Minnesota because I'd have to climb up on this table of a, you know, so, you know, like." And I
he's
was like,
good. Yeah.
Damn it, I kind of like this, like." Yeah.
I mean, even Katie was pretty good in the booth, or you know, in the whatever they call it, you know, for the Big Ten Network, he was good. But you wouldn't think of all of these, you know, crotchety old Big Ten coaches to be actual good TV personalities. Yeah, but who'd have thought?
I think it's tricky, but I think that they have such, you know, like you compare someone like what, like especially when Knight was on, the difference between someone like him and Vitell was staggering because Vitell's a freaking, I mean, he's a caricature regardless, but he's so far removed from ever having any actual basketball expertise. I mean, he hasn't been a coach in 35 years.
Yeah.
And you know, like, it's been so long since he was actually on a bench. He's got no frigging clue what he's talking. It's just, you know. And Knight, it's actually like I was just coaching games, you know. Whether you liked him or not, he really was in the thick of it. And you realize what an all-consuming job that is when this old man still has, like, a sharp mind. It's kind of jarring, really. I actually want to take you guys on a quick non sequitur, not total non sequitur, but I brought up now you're not allowed to look. I want to just tell you about this. The Butler, DePaul, did you see the box score?
I was watching the game.
It's ridiculous. There's a 30-point score on both teams.
Yep.
Is it the little shooter from Butler that was he a 30-point scorer?
Dunham.
Yeah.
Dunham's great. Dunham. He's to me, Butler is him plus a bunch of guys that wouldn't be starting anyplace else.
Well, Dunham shot 6 of 14 from 3. The rest of the team shot 0 of 6 from 3. Yeah. DePaul shot 57% from 3.
No, it's we missed the character of it, but I think the show is so much more listenable now that Jay does what he does. I mean, seriously, it zips through. I always put it on, and I'm working, and I'm like, dang, man, that was good. Good show.
I'm like, yeah, he puts it on. He listens to himself.
Right, exactly.
There was a lot in that statement.
Spoiler down, yeah, he's good. He's
like, man, that guy's good. I wish the other guys would stop talking so I could hear myself.
It's like that comedy bit of Kanye West, like walking in on Kanye West listening to himself, like listening to his latest album.
I always wondered about that. If you're like someone like that, and you're at your house, and you play your own music.
100? No. 100% of the time, it doesn't. When you're sleeping, I'm playing. If I made College Dropout, I would just loop that.
Seriously, that's the best. That's like in the top 5 CDs all time. I was saying this to my father-in-law, which is awesome, because he's like Kanye West is a moron. I said, yeah. I said, I agree. He is a moron. I said his first two CDs were just off the chain. They were awesome, almost start to finish. They're like The Chronic or, Pearl Jam Black. They're incredible CDs. And then he started thinking people wanted to see hear him sing. And I'm like, man, what are you doing?
Or talk,
exactly, about anything. All right, so
I want to ask Anish, since we've got him on here, and one of the things I never do well on this is remind people who are listening, who are guests, but I guess if you're listening to the podcast, you already know because you could back it up and listen and figure out it's the Swamp.
There you go.
Who you've read on the site, you've seen his video breakdowns, you should study them because you feel like you're going to school. I think Dad and I are both more amazed than your analytical skills. We're just amazed that you can
video edit,
record and edit things
exactly.
Like that. That's the part we're amazed.
You know how I do it, Anish, if I were in your position, you know, if I had a you know, a big website that was called on
like
me,
stick figure.
I know I would take my phone and I would hold it up to my TV and record it, and then I would go and take a VCR. And I would put my phone into the VCR and I'd try to figure out how to edit it at that point. And then I'd have to go buy a new phone.
Well, because you can't fit a big rotary phone in a VCR.
No, exactly.
Hi-o.
So,
hey-o. Hey-o.
So, what I was going to ask our esteemed guest was, I don't think we ever, because you kind of came on, when did you start actually officially writing for us? Was it November? December?
Yeah, I think it was November sometime, maybe early November, just before, you know, the season.
Did we talk a whole lot about, we did talk about predictions. We did talk about thoughts for the season. I do remember that now. And I guess what I want to ask you is, are you disappointed so far, or is this going kind of the way you expected it to go with this crop of youngsters?
Record-wise, I think we are a win or two behind what I thought.
The Wazoo game, right? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I actually just had us bookmarked for the non-conference. We would lose to Oklahoma State. We would lose to Ohio. And then, you know, coming into the new year, we'd lose to Ohio State once conference play started.
You thought they'd get Butler, though. That was another one.
Thought we'd get Butler. Thought we'd get West Virginia. But I thought somewhere within that we would lose another one. So I thought we'd be a three-loss team, you know, going into, or I guess, you know, a two-loss team going into Big Ten play. And then we'd lose to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that doesn't seem like much. And it seems like, you know, it's kind of jiving with expectations. But you look at it, and I only see seven more wins.
I'm the exact same way. I just did this the other day, and I was like, when I wrote that, did I mention record in that Painter article?
Yeah, I think you did.
And I did the same thing. I think I said six or seven wins. And it's sobering. You look at the schedule and you're like, wow, something drastically has to change before the season. And we all know as Purdue fans, that just doesn't happen anymore.
You know, I think we could steal the Illinois game. I don't know how much of that is fool's gold or not. Ravonte Rice, I think is his name, is a guy that's just lightning hot.
Is he a freshman?
He's a newcomer. I don't know if he's a freshman or a transfer, but I don't know. He's been just lighting it on fire. It's a great name. It's a strong name. And then, you know, late in the season, we have Michigan at home, and I think we can steal that one.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, I think we can steal that
one. Without McGarry, they are a different team. They are a very different team.
Yeah, but the problem is that we have them February 26th, and that's, you know, getting close to March, and they might have it. They might have it together. You know, I think, you know, Iowa is really good. Wisconsin is really good. Wisconsin's always really good, and I don't know how. Ohio State is incredible. Michigan State's going to win the title, you know.
So you think Michigan State's going to win the title, not Wisconsin?
I think Michigan State's going to win it.
Did you guys watch the Michigan State-Ohio State game, by the way?
It was incredible.
It was great. But did you see Izzo when he came off at halftime? How mad he was?
Beating that kid? I forgot who.
Oh, it was Valentine, right? Valentine.
And then after the game, he said a lot of our guys played like little boys. He was quoted. He was like pissed. He's like, some of our guys came to play. A couple of them played like little boys.
That's awesome. I don't want to cross Tom Izzo. I mean, he's great, but I would not want to cross him.
Well, I like to – at halftime, he was so mad at the officials, though. He was going like this. Like he was doing this weird grunting, trying to release pressure. It was almost like a literal pressure was getting rid of the figurative pressure. So it was like if he didn't have this release valve going in his head, then he was going to his little gigantic head was going to – short gigantic head. I said it wrong. Little gigantic. Like, you know, he's got a bobblehead on top of that body, you know. It's just – shaking around, but he gets mad, and I was like, man, his face is gonna explode. This is great. And he wouldn't even answer the girl. She's new. She's mildly attractive. ESPN can do better than that. But she asked him a question. I think he gave her a one word answer. It was awesome. And he's like, our guy was getting thrown down. I don't like that. And that was it. His two answers were one word and then that. And I was like, wow, that was a great interview. That was so fun. Then he went in and beat on some players some more, and then they came out, and they were freaking amazing after that, you know, football pro wrestler chant. So, but that was a fun game to watch. That was like I remember back when Purdue played in the Big Ten in basketball. That's what
I was telling myself saying. I said I was like, you know what made me sad about that was especially when I looked on Twitter and it was like the only thing that everybody in our feed was talking about is that. I was like, I wish Purdue still played in those games. Just like I've said about football. Like the one night, not to go back to football, but Nish, we talked about football a little bit, sadly, before we brought you on. You know, what was the best game or best moment of the football season that was that bleak? And it was, I'll tell you, it was the opening to the Purdue Notre Dame game, when it was from the blimp and the place is full and they're playing Eminem music on ABC, and then Purdue comes out and scores, and I'm like, that was it, that was the high point right there. I mean, it was because everyone was watching. That's the one thing that the Notre Dame football game does for Purdue, is that everybody in the country is pulling for Purdue.
It's electric.
And everyone's pulling for Purdue. You know, everyone's pulling for your alma mater. It's
awesome. You know, hold on. I mean, I think I read the post that that one, I think it was Dowd that wrote the Notre Dame post. I'm not sure. But you guys really aren't. I'm kind of not devastated, but it's like, that's a cool game that we played every year.
Yeah, I'm jaded on that, and I'll tell you why I'm jaded. And Jay and I have talked about this a lot. Is I got so pissed off watching Delaney kiss Notre Dame's ass and watching Morgan Burke kick Notre Dame's ass. That's the deal. I'm just like, well, if they're off the schedule, you don't have a chance for these schlubs to be, you know.
But you're looking at it as the old man, like you're looking at it like the way you look at life, where you're like, screw you, I'm not gonna at it like, I am not gonna be beholden to someone for no apparent reason. And that's absolutely the way to live. Absolutely. But when it comes to this, Purdue, I mean,
it's a big loss monetarily.
Purdue needs them way more than they needed Purdue.
Oh yeah,
and that fact alone probably makes me want to just say I just rather have them.
It
not
bothers
them.
You. Right. I know. But look at we were just talking about next year's pre-con. It's what is it? Western Illinois, Eastern Illinois, and Central Michigan or something? No, Western Michigan, Central Michigan, and Southern Illinois. Well, okay. So add a fourth one of that crap, and now you've got no games that matter at all until a conference schedule. So I always liked that there was an early season game that if you lost it, okay, it wouldn't ruin your season. Yeah. But if you won it, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was just a fantastic start to your season.
Yeah, that's
so,
you know, before.
I just don't want a 6-year gap.
No, but here are choices. Let's look at the reality of the thing. Okay, before Joe Tiller was hired, Purdue was pistol whipped by Notre Dame time and time again, and the only really, you know, there's a little umbrella of goodness in there when Notre Dame had the ex high school coach coaching them back in the mid 80s, and Jim Everett was slinging the ball.
Faust.
Yeah. Okay. So that's it. That's really it. Other than that, Purdue was just getting their cans kicked around. If you go back until like what 70, right?
74 they won at Notre Dame.
Okay, so there you go. So that's really that was it. And then they didn't do it until Orton won.
Until
Orton,
04, 30 years.
So you have Tiller, even though it was competitive again, and the rivalry mattered. And I think Purdue fans, maybe not all Purdue fans. I think younger Purdue fans, when I say younger, I mean under the age of 35 at the time. Okay, especially the guys in their 20s, like Jay and I, you know, who are fresh alums. I think we almost stopped caring about IU because we're like, all right, Tiller's going to beat the hell out of IU every time he plays. Maybe one out of every 8 or 9 that IU's going to win or compete, you know. And the rest of them, he's just going to just bludgeon them. And then on the other side, you had these Notre Dame games that were just epic, where if Purdue lost, it was because they had a blocked punt and a kickoff run back and, you know, something unusual had to happen, you know. But Purdue was competing. Even when Purdue would lose, Purdue was competing with them. And it was toe-to-toe, last-second stuff. And when Purdue won, it was on this fantastic, heart-stopping, way of doing it, you know. So it became really important. And then Breeze goes away, Orton goes away, and then we're back to where we were, really. I mean, there's a couple blips in there, but almost winning doesn't count unless you're winning one in every 3 or 4. Because all it does is make me more frustrated, right?
Oh gosh, the hope losses, and even this past year. I mean, that was their best chance of beating a 1A school.
Right.
I mean, the closest they came, and they still had their hearts ripped out. Right. So yeah, no, I don't know. The upside is so high on something like that because of the feeling it'll give you if you win. I don't mind them being off and maybe, you know, making it a little more exciting when they do play again. Yeah. But like I said, 6 years means that there's going to be obviously a number of complete classes that will never play against them. And there will be classes of students that will never see Purdue and Notre Dame play. Yeah. So then when the rivalry comes back or the schedule comes back, will that mean anything to people? It'll start to mean something only to the old guys because we'll remember it.
I don't know. Yeah. I think it's going to be –
old guys like a knee.
I think it's going to be – that's right. At that time, it'll be very old. But no, it's I think it means something because it's proximity and everybody hates Notre Dame.
I mean, to get it back, a little bit, this is something similar, is that we only play IU once this year. And it was the same, I think, early in my undergrad. And that
just... isn't that the year that they scheduled them as a non-conference game, too?
Yeah. Do you want to know? This is a neat little piece of history, and this is something I don't do this too often where I talk about my professional life. But that game, they played pre-conference in a doubleheader with the women's team. Both Purdue and IU did not have the women's and men's basketball, only played them once during regular con. Okay, and that year I was hired by Purdue University and Indiana University to design the logo for the game and to come up with the name of the game.
Ooh.
And the Duel in the Dome was the name. And
look at you.
So I have no proof of it other than a picture of Mike Davis by the scores table with Duel in the Dome written real big. It's in my portfolio. But I don't have a cup. I don't have anything. I don't even know if they had them. Purdue probably went cheap and just gave out, red solo cups to everybody and black solo cups, depending on which side of the.
You got as much recognition as the guy who designed the helmets this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Except I did get paid. That's the difference. So.
Anish, did you have a full appreciation for how much that guy got rooked?
Yes. I think it was a year ago when he came out with his first designs, and they were incredible, and they were incredible.
We promoted the hell out of it. Yeah. We kept saying, look at what this guy did, and we gave him as much credit as we could. We directed a number of things, including our own designs, at who was it? Right, who was the coach who actually retweeted it?
Marcus Freeman.
Freeman, yeah. Okay. So it was definitely in there, and I don't often do this, but I feel like we definitely had some influence on that, getting some, getting spread around a little bit, because people saw our players were seeing it and were like, oh, this would be amazing. I'd love to wear this. And then they just do it. And the guy we contact, we're like, hey, did they, we're like, congrats. Did they do? Nope. They didn't even tell me.
Well, and then I started after I confirmed with him that it wasn't really on the up and up. And then I just went into a barrage, and I was tweeting everybody I could, and I kept going about it, about how this was just wrong. This was just really, really wrong,
Theft. It's theft.
It's absolute theft. And I took it personally because of my job, I think it was really, really poorly handled by whoever made the decision. And I don't know if that could be a consortium of people, but it was really handled poorly. And the really interesting thing is, I don't know if you guys have noticed this on our Twitter feed, is there's another guy who claims that guy stole the design from him.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yes, it's really interesting because he said he made a physical helmet a year ago, and he did it. He said he did it based on Purdue Pete had a black helmet with a railroad track down the center. Okay? So that's probably where the athletic department gets their idea.
Or claims they got it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay? So this guy made a physical helmet with almost the exact same thing. He made it, though. He made it, and then he published it someplace. The problem is no one ever saw it. I never saw it until after, but he claims his goes back 2 years. So he said, could you guys give credit where it's due? And he kept asking us, and he was agitated with us. I'm like, I've never seen you before. I don't know anything about you. What I do know is this student, he published it in the Exponent.
Right.
That's what we know. Okay. And before that, we never saw any proof from the athletic department was going to happen. And my theory is that the athletic department looked, I told Jay this, that they looked at a bunch of designs, including designs that I had put out into the air, just saying, hey, please try something that's better than what's out there. And I believe that they showed everything that was out there, and they chose that kid's design. And then they went and they contacted a supplier. And they had a kid I think I know who did the graphics, he's actually a friend of ours, BS's. But he's in house at Purdue now. He does graphics and photography and other things. He's a nice guy. But he was just doing what he was told. And I think he just kind of did the vector art, sent it off to supplier. They had the helmets done. By the way, they did it the cheap way. Jay and I talked about this. They did it with decals. They didn't do it with the dip process.
Yeah.
So and it did look like it, but it was an improvement. It was nice that they tried it. So, but he did it, and that's it. So I guess they thought no one's going to remember this Exponent article. I mean, how the hell would they think that?
Well, and then after we, badgered them, then he gets a call. The kid gets a call, and he's like, well, they got in touch with me, and they said, don't worry. We're going to take care of you.
That was amazing.
And we were like, what does that mean? He goes, I don't know. We're like, listen, I know you're a kid, and I know you're not as much of a pain in the ass as we are, but that's what you say. What do you mean? How are you going to take care of me? Yeah. And how about you take care of me now before it's out there and public? And how about you take care of me now instead of after the fact, where then you see – what if it's a failure?
Yeah.
What if nobody likes it? Then you're going to be like, well, what do you need to take? You know, you, what's the – and then you know how they took care of him? They gave him a helmet.
That's what it is. Yep.
And you know what? And he was happy as a freaking lark. By the way, that's what I said. Remember I said they need to give him a helmet and a handshake. And he'll be quiet because he's a big fan, as he's a student. That's what they freaking did.
Yeah, but it would have worked if they did that at the start.
Hell yeah, it would have.
And a little recognition. Yeah. Remember we said recognition on the field that day? Yep. You say, and the helmet was designed by this guy, right?
I think people would have loved that. They would have rallied around it. You know, that's neat that students getting some props. Yeah. That would have been great, but no.
In case you can't tell, Anish, we have a little problem with the way Purdue handles
things. I don't know. I don't know if it's just the way Purdue handles things. I think this is kind of the ugly side of rooting for college sports. I mean, there's always kind of an achy side of college sports. There is,
but there are things that don't – see, that doesn't need to be.
That's true.
No reason that scenario needed to be like that.
Yeah.
And that's our problem. And the way – well, it's a whole. We could have a whole podcast on the way Purdue strong arms people and or tries to strong arm people. I mean, it's the whole reason they don't like us, and the whole reason Purdue football has us freaking blocked.
I know that's bizarre.
For God's sake, that is the dumbest, pettiest, childish thing. And I don't even know what the hell we did. We think it happened when we began publishing prospective coaching lists while Danny Hope was still employed.
Yeah. We don't know when they blocked us, though. We can't.
No, I'm saying I think that's probably about when it
happened.
Wasn't
everybody doing that, though?
Maybe.
I guess.
Maybe. We don't know. That's the whole point. I don't think anybody was real happy with them 2 years ago, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, well, we're off topic again. But so I, one thing I did want to follow up on, though, you said you think they're a couple games off, and now you're looking at it and you're seeing only – now, I'm assuming that was a revised – when you say you only see seven more wins – you're saying because of what you've seen so far, it leads you to think, wow, there's only about seven more games I could see them stealing.
Yep.
So now, let's say that happens. You would agree they're not going to the tournament if that happens. And is that – would you agree that's a tremendous letdown?
That's a letdown. I don't know if it's tremendous. I was expecting a 12 seed going in, and, you know, that's just 12 to 14 is about the lowest a Big Ten will ever be.
Yeah, but that's such a – I mean I get what you're saying, okay, that if you barely get into the tournament, you know, and then you don't get in the tournament, there's not much difference. But there is a difference.
No, there is definitely a difference, and it's a letdown, but it's not the difference between expecting to be a 5 seed and being out of the tournament, you know.
Yeah.
But this team has – this is more – this team has more talent on the roster than a lot of teams Purdue has had that have been in the tournament as a single-digit seed, I would argue. I just think there's – there's a lot of talent on this team. Some of it's young, but it's not all young. Teron Johnson's a senior. I said this after the Ohio State game. Does it feel weird to you that he is the same year as Aaron Kraft? Does that feel possible?
Well,
Kraft looks like he's been there 8 years.
He's really good.
Aaron Kraft
is really good.
Aaron Kraft is not – he's not going to play in the NBA.
No, yeah, because he's about 6 inches too small.
Right. But he can't score either.
Yeah, I mean, he can't shoot. How's he that good?
I don't know. He's
so. I mean, I'm not trying to be stupid with this pun, but he's crafty as hell. He just does things. You're like, that's like something that just shouldn't have worked on defense, on offense.
You mean like when he sprints down the court and goes out of bounds and flings the ball back to the perimeter and there's a guy
open
who
hits it. Yeah.
Every time.
I mean, that seriously, Jay. Does that not remind you the way I played at the freaking Korek?
Yeah, but you and you did it. It would bounce.
That's
off the
exactly
back.
Right. That's true. That is a big difference, I guess.
Let's kind of look at it. I think we steal one game and then we feast on playing Nebraska twice, playing Penn State twice, playing Northwestern twice. Those are 6 wins. Those are 6 wins. If we lose one of those, we're out of the tournament. I think we can steal 2 of Illinois, Indiana, Michigan. So at Illinois, home versus Indiana, home versus Michigan, and home versus Minnesota. I think we get 2 of those and, or 1 to 2 of those, and that'll put us at about 17 or 18 wins, if I'm still counting right.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think they need, about 19 or 20? They need over 20 to feel comfortable, right?
20 wins.
This schedule has to be over 20.
20 wins.
Schedule's 2 weeks.
I don't know. 20 wins in the Big Ten is a tournament team. I mean, that's
you don't think it has to be 21 because that pre-con is so weak, so weak. And that Washington State loss, you have to counter that Washington State loss with a win over a very good team. Like you got to steal one.
My thing is here really it doesn't really. The number of wins isn't as crucial. I think it's where we place in the Big Ten. 7 Big Ten teams are going to the tournament. The conference is so strong this year that I can almost guarantee you that 7 teams are going to the tournament. If you're that 8th team, if you have a good enough a good enough resume, then you're getting in. Yeah. Indiana, Minnesota right now. Minnesota really right now, if they're that 8th team, they're in. But I don't think they slip. I think they're pretty comfortably in. So if we count it, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, and Illinois are in, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Illinois might slip out, that's but 6. Whatever. That's 6. You have one spot guaranteed for Minnesota, Indiana, and Purdue. And that second spot is you're kind of on the bubble. You know, you look at all the insider things or whatever, you'll be in that on the bubble discussion.
You look at every computer model though, and every computer model, your prediction, my prediction, and just what you're seeing game in, game out, I just don't see any way in hell that they get to that 19-21 mark.
We would have to see something. Don't know. I mean, it's frustrating because I can't put my finger on it. I don't know what's wrong. I mean, like, you know, it's just the guard play has been so inconsistent. Bryson Scott is amazing in the last 5 minutes of a game.
Yeah.
The first, however, 35 minutes, he's, a freshman.
Yeah.
Ronnie Johnson is, the Jekyll and Hyde player, I called him.
Yeah.
And AJ Hammond.
But there's no problem. You probably feel the same way as everybody does in that Ronnie Johnson gets less margin for error, of course, because he's a sophomore, right? I mean, yes, you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's the guard play is really what it is. Tyrone Johnson is our leading scorer, but he's so quiet that you can't really tell, and you can't derive any energy or leadership from that.
Well, not only is he quiet, but also at the same time, he'll have, like, which game was it? It was the Butler game where he had 20 points, the first 20-point game, because he had like 2 in a 3-game period where he had 20.
Yeah, that's right.
And that game, though, he had 20 points. I wanted him on the bench so badly in the last couple minutes. And he was on the bench in the last couple minutes. He was kind of whining or pouting. He had a towel over his head. And I was like, I don't know if he was angry or if he was sad or, his tummy hurt. But whatever it was, I did not, I was like, good, keep him off. You know, how many times have we said that about a Purdue player that scores 20? You're like, I mean, I guess the last time would be like Willie Dean, where you're like, man, that sucked. 20 points and he was just horrible to watch. And you're like, man, don't screw up. Don't do something stupid. Don't dribble into a triple team. How many times has he done that this year? You're a senior. You cannot do that.
I'll counter that with the fact that, in the Minnesota game, him and AJ Hammonds made the most clutch, along with, the kid. They made the most clutch plays of the game when they were trying to get us back into it. Carter Scott Smotherman brought us the energy back in, but Hammonds and Tyrone Johnson were the ones that were, hitting those big shots. But I am not a believer in. I think senior leadership is a fake thing. I think senior leadership is something really convenient that you look to because, hey, you're the oldest, you need to lead. I mean, it's very convenient to only think of Chris Kramer in his senior year, but he was the undisputed face of the thing. Yeah. Since his sophomore year.
Yep.
Etuan Moore was always, a leader just minute. Yeah. Rob from, halfway
let's,
through.
Let's get tangential in a good way here. Okay. And I think it's a very good point. Okay. So Chris Kramer, really, when it really gets down to, what Painter did with the Landry Teague team is noteworthy because they had two guys with bum knees who there weren't a ton of expectations and really didn't have anything around them. But what they did have around them is they had Keaton Grant and Chris Kramer as freshmen. Okay. And Kramer right away, although he wasn't very skilled offensively, he was so much energy, just like Aaron Kraft, so much energy and contagious energy. So is the question, was it Chris Kramer who really defined the early Matt Painter's success, or was it Matt Painter that his philosophy was different than it is now, that his attention to detail was different now, that the rules allowed Purdue to play different defense, and Purdue feasted on the fact that they could hand check and body up on people and that sort of thing. What is the factor that has changed? Is it something as simple as, and Jay, you can edit this or not, but this is something that has to be over on everybody's head. Since the personal issues that happened with Painter, something is very, very, very different.
Well, and we've, you know, between we've each written stuff about this. You obviously wrote that one that's been talked about quite a bit about it being the coaching without a doubt, which in the end, yeah. And each when you say, I can't put my finger on it, what is it? I can't figure it out. Well, then that to me screams coaching, because if it's not one really evident thing, there aren't injuries, there aren't a lack of talent, there aren't, you know, then it's coaching. It has to fall to the coaching. Yeah. This is their damn job at $1 million plus a year, $2 million a year to figure it out. Okay, so that's one thing. The other thing that occurred to me, and I did mean to write a little bit more about this. I was actually talking. I kind of had a little mini roundtable on Twitter the other night about kind of following up on your post. People started talking about it, and I started responding to a few things. And one of the things that I think Travis actually was replying, and he was saying the same kind of thing, like, "But what the hell is it?" He's like, "What is going on with?" He's still recruiting well, maybe better. He's getting good recruits. And I said, you know what I think is possible, and I don't think this is necessarily it, but is it possible that – think about his successes at Purdue. Like you said, that Dean team, like that early team, they had nothing, and they really overachieved. Then he brings in – then Teague. And then he brings in the baby boiler recruiting recruitments, who, as you said, Johnson was a project at first. Right. You know, Rob Hummel wasn't projected to be – he was thought of like he could be as good as he got, but maybe not right away. Right. And so, again, overachieving. Is it possible that he does better, just like Gene Katie did, with guys who were either scrap heap guys or not as highly touted, three-star guys, rather than now that he's getting four-star guys and guys who are considered huge upside, huge chance to develop into something else, that he doesn't know how to take them to that next level? Is that a possibility too?
I don't buy it. I don't buy it. What I do buy is, and I'm trying to look this up right now, you know, name a recruit from 2009, 2000, even probably even as early as 2008, 2009, and 2010 that made a difference. That's it. And that's the problem, is that we didn't see it then, just like I was saying before, Etuan Moore covers a lot of problems.
Right.
I mean, like, you know, he's the one, Robbie and Juwan covered such a hole that it didn't matter at that point that we were only getting two-star recruits. You know what I mean? And now is where we find it, where we have these two incredibly talented, you know, classes, and the only person that has any experience is Tyrone Johnson. And even then, Tyrone wasn't a focal point. And Tyrone wasn't even a vocal point.
But here's the thing. Let's go. We've talked about that hold of poor classes. You know, you have the big men that just didn't pan out, you know, and there's a lot of them there. There's what, four or five in a row, really, that just haven't been producers, right? Some of them have left the program, some have stayed the program, but none of them looked the part in Big Ten play, okay? So you can say that's a big deal in recruiting, but look at the guys who were recruited, like Jay said, that were four-star recruits, and I can think of, let's see, two or three right away that are guards that were recruited by a lot of people, and they've not just developed at all. So does Painter is he not able to develop guards? I mean, that comes back to where we started at the beginning of this discussion. Does Painter not know how to develop guards?
I think the case study will be Basil Smotherman.
Yeah.
You know, we have,
but he's a shooting forward. Smotherman is it's weird. You know, certain coaches, like we talked about it all the time, Tom Crean can't develop bigs. You know, he had Zeller, which Zeller stayed the same or got worse, right? And even historically, if you go back to Marquette, he has a hard time developing bigs. But he's great at getting these guards just to squeeze everything possible out of these guys. So guard play matters.
I think what Smotherman is 6'7", I think, and he's a long 6'7". His wingspan is somewhere close to, you know, 6'10", 6'11". He's an NBA body. And I almost called him Everett Stevens, Kendall Stevens, is 6'7", you know, the prototypical shooting wing in the NBA. If he, you know, he has a niche where this is the, you know, he's the 3-point, 3-and-D guy, and if Painter can get him there, he's an NBA body, and A.J. Hammonds is an NBA player right now. Right. I mean, I don't, you know, that whether you want to say he's a lottery pick or not, I mean, he's not, but he will be drafted if and when he goes this year. And
question right there.
Yeah.
Is he gone after this year?
Yes. Yes. 100% yes. 100% yes.
100%.
I love that confidence.
He has to go. I mean, like, and Painter's told him this. And the reason is not because of Isaac Haas or anything. He's 21 years old. And he's going to be 22 by the time the NBA season starts. Nobody wants to pick up a 23-year-old project, a big man project in the NBA. Yeah. So he's gone this year, and he has to go.
So can you explain something to me? Because I know his path is circuitous. How is he that old?
Was he held
back in middle school?
Because he went to my high school. He went to Carmel High School.
Right.
And when he switched schools, there was some sort of, he had to either play 1 year over again or something like that, or like going in, it was that, you know, you hold him back a year in eighth grade so that he plays against smaller competition and dominates. That's a lot of recruits do that, especially a lot of big men do that, which is why you see a lot of older big men. But the problem is that the ones that you hear about are the kids like Mitch McGarry, who are going to go in the lottery no matter what.
Is McGarry old as well?
McGarry's a year old because he went to prep school for a year. But yeah, I think we have three NBA prospects on our roster, and two of them really need to be developed, and the two of them are guards. Right. So I think Basil Smotherman and Kendall Stevens, and next year when Vince Edwards comes in, those are the players that he's got to really develop. And
Vince Edwards, he's a little different of an animal though, because he's slower. I mean, he's significantly slower. He's very skilled, but doesn't he look slower when you watch his tape?
He is incredibly skilled. He's like, at the highest level, if you watch, Jabari Parker.
Yeah.
Jabari Parker is slow, but he's not slow. He's methodical.
Right.
And he will just pick you apart. And at a much lower level, I think that's similar to what Vince Edwards is that he's much more talented and much smarter than he is athletic.
So Vince Edwards, his stock was pretty high after his sophomore year, right? I mean, he was very high after sophomore year AAU season. And that's where the fire started, and he started kind of flirting with everybody who would flirt with him, right? And he enjoyed the recruiting class, and that's when – he kind of wore me out. I was like, just whatever. Make your decision. I don't even care. And I mean, a lot of people disagree with me on that, but I just don't have anything. He was just – he didn't do anything horrible. He just wore me out. Like I said, he just – man, just stop.
That's almost Purdue's fault, because he was going to commit to us his sophomore year. And he was talked out of it – or not talked out of it, but Coach Shrewsbury told him, hey, let's slow down. And, you know
– oh, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, like, he was him
that.
And he, you know, him and his mom were almost, you know, all ready to give a commitment, and this was on the heels of maybe on the heels or maybe a couple months into it or whatever. Yeah. But the Derek Willis thing, this was kind of, you know, in the vicinity of that, I believe. I might be. Okay. You know,
I know. I think you're exactly right.
So I think they wanted to secure him and make sure that, you know, because he's such a big fish, that, you know, he would take his time. And. And the only school he really flirted with was Michigan.
Yeah.
And if Michigan came knocking on my door, I'd listen to.
Sure.
And that's the other problem, is that Purdue is a terrible job. Mm-hmm. You've got to out-recruit Louisville, Kentucky, Indiana, Michigan, Michigan State, and now Illinois is coming back. Like, there, and Ohio State, I didn't even touch on. Like,
I was listening to a discussion this week reading the discussion on the Knucklehead board. The same thing, people are saying it's a horrible job. You know, if Painter leaves for one reason or another, then who are they going to get? The problem that I have with that idea is Purdue has still done a pretty decent job with Indianapolis, you know, and Indianapolis in itself is that if you can not own Indianapolis but do really well in Indianapolis, you're gonna be okay as a basketball team. Okay, it's tough. You may not be like your, you know.
Indianapolis is kind of owned by, I'd say it's kind of owned by Kentucky and
Kentucky,
Indiana.
Louisville, yeah.
Yeah, Louisville too.
But that's the whole thing, is if you can know yourself and have something that makes you different and be able to kind of stick with those guns. I think one of the problems is, to me, there's the big derailment with the Painter era is after that UConn game. And I've said this, I think I said it on our last podcast, didn't I? Where I said, when Painter got beaten up, when Purdue's team got beaten up by UConn in the tournament years ago, and Painter was like, we're not going to be a finesse team. I'm going to go get size. I'm going to get strength. And you saw the body type change of the guys he was going after. He went after bigger, stronger bodies. And it didn't work at all because it doesn't fit in Painter's system, because you need motion on the other side, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of why you're not seeing that right now. We don't run a motion system anymore. We run a swinging across the perimeter. But the problem is that our perimeter guys don't know what to do.
Right.
And
right.
Then when they get into a bind, all of them are skilled enough that they can drive it. I mean, they're all very skilled, you know, to getting in the paint. But it's not, you know, you see that against the zone. There is very little room to dribble against the zone. You have to pass it, and you have to have great movement, and you have to have great off the ball cuts. And the only two people that are, you know, beautiful off the ball are Kendall Stevens and sometimes Basil Smotherman.
Right.
You know, and otherwise you have that. The other big thing is that Jay Simpson, who I was ready to write when Big Ten season came up, I had a whole thing queued up on him, like a whole post queued up on him about how incredible his footwork is. He's really stagnated, and I can hardly stand to watch him on defense.
Oh, yeah.
His feet are in cement 100% of the time.
Yeah.
He's never helping.
That's not fatigue. That's attitude, correct?
Because he came in, he was redshirted because he had a foot injury. So it could be fatigue. It could be, just getting that, you know, coordination back. But he was looking better, but, you know, defensively he's been just a train wreck, and you don't get on the court if you don't play defense well.
So answer me a question, and I think I know the answer, but it's I still want to hear your opinion. Why can't we see Hammonds and Simpson on the court ever? And I know that defense is probably a big thing, foot speed's a big deal, but couldn't the fact that they're just both so big help the glass situation from time to time and, I mean, create some better driving lanes?
I think we could, but I think having Eric Peck – you know, the prototypical stretch four that'll do everything on the court is too enticing to keep on the bench with one of them on the court. I mean, that's kind of what I see. Also, it's that, you know, Hammonds has that jumper, but Painter likes him in the paint getting dirty on offense. And that's where Simpson is. That's the strength of his game. Mm-hmm. So you'd have, and Simpson can't, he doesn't have a jumper. He doesn't have anything that can stretch the floor.
Yeah.
So you would have to actually post, you know, keep Simpson in the post and bring AJ out a little bit. And when you have a 7-footer who's, you know, 7-foot, 260-pound guy, you can't bring him out.
So just to review, I mean, I agree with your theory, but you say Hammonds is absolutely gone. And I've heard this conversation, the end of the year review from last year. Is there anything other than people's theory that is out there that, I mean, what there are people that speak with the same confidence as you in other places. Is there anything out there that like someone's account, first person account, you know, they've talked to Hammonds and he said, yeah, I think this is it.
No. And I think he's first of all, I have no inside information at all. I'm just doing this from a, if I were him and if I were Coach Painter, he's 21 years old and, you know, all that, he has to go at the end of this year. And if he stays another year, it's just another year to lower his ceiling in the eye of NBA scouts.
Right.
And I don't think that, and people disagree with me on this. I had a Twitter fight the other day about it, but people disagree. I don't think AJ Hammonds is the kind of personality that would come out and say, yeah, I'm leaving.
Right.
He, from all accounts and from all, you know, interviews that I see of him, he's a very soft spoken guy. He's
a very, very, very nice person.
You met him, right?
Yes. He is very – I've met him twice, okay? He is very, very nice. He is very polite. He is – he's got a good sense of humor. I know I sound like his mom or something. But I really liked him. I was shocked because I'd heard some people, you know, talk about that, you know, kind of the lackadaisical nature of him, you know. But I was like, wow. This was that, you know, that day. They had two games in a row where they opened up the place to fans, you know, where they could come in and get autographs. And, you know, they had the Cardinal Court open. And they had lines set up where they had individual players, and then they had a table where guys were all sitting at a table. I think they had four guys sitting at a table. Then they had a couple guys running a drill kind of thing, and you could go through and talk to them there. But then they had Hammond just kind of sitting out there like an island in the middle. And he had the biggest line consistently. For the hour and a half that they were running it, 2 hours they were running it, biggest line, he's just standing there. He doesn't have a place to sit. And he's, you know, jumping through hoops for people, and he was smiling and laughing. And we were towards the end of his very line, and a friend of mine who's 6'8", 6'9", said, "I got to get a picture with you just for reference to see how, you know, if it's really true you're 7 feet tall." And he is. And so you guys probably – maybe you saw the picture of me and him and Hammonds. And so I said, "Let me get a picture in here for my references. I want to see if I'm really as short as I am."
If you come up to his knee.
Yeah, well, Hammonds was – I mean he – put his hand on top of my head before the picture was taken and kind of grabbed it and then tapped me. And he said, "Oh man, you're all right," or something like that. It was just, I was like, you know, he's been doing this for 2 hours and he still got his wits about him. He was good with my son. He was good with a bratty kid that was in front of my, in line with us. And he was good with an old man, me, you know, who just said, "Hey, you know, can you get a picture with a guy who's, you know, really unimportant?" But I was like, "What? That's pretty great." He didn't show any signs of disgruntlement. I was like, wow, I know for me, shit, doing that for that long, I'd be at my wit's end. You know, I'd be.
Oh,
done.
Not even half that long.
You'd be, oh, four or five minutes.
Well, but you know what's interesting is what you're describing is that's the upside of his laid back personality. Yep. Like, you know, and the things people complain about is seeing that he's even, right? He's even keeled, and he doesn't get, you know, it doesn't look like he's hustling. It doesn't look like he cares, but he does. Yeah. And actually, that will do it for part one of the supersized extended dance remix, Bold Sports Handsome Hour. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back with part two very shortly.